Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about how the omega-3 fatty acids can prevent Alzheimer's disease. University of Texas research. And moderate drinking, you know what people were told, drink and it'll ward off heart disease. No, it's not true. University of Victoria. But it will kill a lot of brain cells, heart cells, liver, and kidney cells. And from Taipei Medical University in Taiwan, an antioxidant-rich grape powder protects your brain from damage caused by high sugar, high fat. Well, gee whiz, that's important. I know a lot of you are using grape. A good night's sleep rests on your spine's biomechanics. What's that mean? I'll explain. And negative thoughts actually can show that it damages your DNA. Well, this is new research. A thought can actually damage DNA? That's correct. We'll explain how all that works. Also, from our environmental segment, from Climate News Network, from Tim Radford, the Antarctic is warming up faster than what any model showed, and it threatens vast sea shelf. The world's second largest ice shelf is in danger of shrinking dramatically as the Southern Ocean continues to warm. I talked about this. I said this was coming. Well, it's here. I'll explain that. Also, some commentaries today. We'll be taking a look at The Death of the Republic, Chris Hedges' Truth Dig. We'll also be looking at Israeli Lobby Pays the Political Piper, Jonathan Marshall, Consortium News. We'll look at why public control, meaning you and I having some control over infrastructure, matters, from Winomi Hodder from Food and Water Watch. And Americans are paying $38 to collect $1 of student debt. Student loan defaults are a bonanza for the debt collection industry, from Bloomberg. And also, I'm going to go to our audio file today because I took a break after a long evening where I did a 3+ hour discussion on anti-aging. It was very well received, and it was full, and we want to thank all the people from around the world who tuned in. But I watched a short little 6-minute debate between Cornel West and Bill Maher. And it had to do with Bill Maher wanting people to get back to the basics with the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton, and why Hillary would have been a much better president than Donald Trump. Really? Okay, we're going to take an in-depth look at this. Also, if you've been watching the news, you hear about how the president is saying everything is the best and everything peace is here because he's there. He's in the Middle East. And the media was just fawning over our president's first trip abroad. What's really going on? What about that $110 billion arms sale to Saudi Arabia? Is that good or not? I will do a commentary on these issues. So we have a lot to share. And I'm going to begin with a little insight into something that we've talked so much about. That's the omega-3 fatty acids. Clearly, everyone should know now that you should be having it every day. But for different reasons, it helps your heart. It helps keep your arteries pliable. It helps clear up some of the defects of all of the damage done to the inside artery, the epithelium. It can help lower your blood pressure. It can lower cholesterol. It's all around just great for you. And it can help prevent heart attacks. Here's something new. The incidence of Alzheimer's disease is expected to triple. And keep in mind, when you add up all the people who are baby boomers, my generation, and our parents, the senior generation, you're dealing with over 100 million Americans. A little under 1/3 of the entire American population. That means that all of us are susceptible to the choices we've made in our life. The fun choices, the delicious choices, the crunchy choice, the sweet, all the things we couldn't live without, and now we're paying a price for. And here's the challenge. We have no system in place currently to help take care of all these individuals. Now, just over the weekend alone, I had no less than 3 individuals who I know for a long time, all of whom are in their 50s and 60s, dealing with their parents who are in their 80s and 90s, suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia. They didn't want to change. They didn't. And then it started, and once it starts, it's a slippery slope and it goes fast. But then what do you do if a person doesn't have the money to go into a home? Maybe they just have Social Security and that's not enough. So one thing we can do, and we can do it now, everybody can start taking your omega-3 fatty acids because the evidence is in. It has anti-amyloid, anti-tau, and anti-inflammatory actions in the brain. This was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Researchers have found that for patients with high omega-3 fatty acids, blood flow in specific areas of the brain is increased. Quote from the study, "This study is a major advance in demonstrating the value of nutritional intervention for healthy brain health by using the latest brain imaging." And so they took a look at the brain with people using omega-3. Made a big difference. So if you have someone who has Alzheimer's, I'll give a protocol later this week, a very detailed protocol for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's on the air, so you can help the people in your life if they're open to it, or their care providers. But for everyone else, this will help prevent that from happening in you. Do you remember we were told almost 30 years ago that moderate drinking was good for you? In fact, it got to where people should have 2 drinks a day. And I will never forget this, because one day a person comes into my office, and I don't screen the people before they come in. They just have to have a letter showing that they're terminally ill. Anyhow, this man comes in and he sits down and he says, "I've got a problem and I don't know what to do." I said, "What's your problem?" He said, "Well, I've got heart disease, I've got liver disease, and I've got kidney disease, and yet my doctor says that I'm doing everything right. Let's go through your diet, let's go through what you're doing to see if indeed it is right." And he was eating an average American diet. It was not a good diet, it was not a healthy diet, but I guess to this doctor, everything in moderation is still okay. Well, let me tell you something. A poison in a moderate amount is still poison. We know, for example, that one single drop out of an eyedropper of mercury into an Olympic swimming pool will contaminate the entire pool. You're talking about parts per billion will contaminate an entire area. So imagine if you're taking in a lot of stuff every day that's toxic. You're going to be toxic. So here's the deal. I said, "What are you drinking each day?" He said, "Well, I have a cup of coffee in the morning." And because the doctors had discussed some antioxidants, I said, "The antioxidants are in the uncooked bean." He is correct. In the green coffee bean, there's a lot of antioxidants and a high oric. But once you boil it, you're destroying the antioxidants. All you're getting are slight polyphenols, very slight. But you're also getting a highly acidic product that can create GERD or gastric reflux when it hits hydrochloric acid in your stomach. So one of the reasons we have so much heartburn is because of coffee consumption and caffeine. And a lot of people are having very high levels of caffeine beverages today, including the espressos. They're getting 300-400 milligrams of caffeine, so their whole body is artificially jolted forward. It would be as if someone came up in the middle of the night, you're sleeping, and they put electrical attachment to your toe and then shocked you, and you jumped out of bed. That's what it's like to have coffee in the morning. It's really stupid. It is one of the most destructive things we do. And yet, because so many people do it, it couldn't possibly be bad, because we're a country of consensus. Well, it's still wrong and it's still stupid. So if you want to get rid of migraine headaches, you get rid of the caffeine. If you want to get rid of GERD and gastric distress in so many people, you get rid of the coffee. So in any case, I said, do you drink any fresh juices? He said, no, I don't have to because I have my 2 glasses of alcohol each day. I said, what kind of alcohol? I have bourbon. Bourbon, 2 glasses of bourbon. What is that, about 80 proof, 90 proof? He said, yeah. I said, why? He said, my doctor said it's good for your heart. I said, show me a scientific study proving that. So I went up on PubMed and I showed him that every single study shows that alcohol destroys heart cells. In fact, every glass of hard alcohol destroys about 1 million brain cells, 1 million heart cells, 1 million kidney, 1 million liver. I said, there's your liver, your kidney, and your heart. And it can cause myocardial condition that a myopathy, which is a weakening of the heart muscle. And that's what he had. I said, so the interesting thing is your doctor's killing you. So I said, I'm going to tell you a little story. The story is when this first came out, what was called the French paradox. The French have a high amount of fat in the diet between animal proteins and butters. And so they said that the paradox was that they also had wine at their meals, which is true. And therefore, there must be some healing benefit in the wine that negated the harmful benefit in the animal fats and the arachidonic acid. So knowing that nothing is ever reported correctly in America when it comes to health issues, I went over to France. I went into the cities and Paris and the other out in the country. And a friend of mine is Parisian and took me around and translated. I got to interview a lot of people. Here's what I found. First, people in the country pride themselves in having their own organic gardens. They're very smart about pesticides and try not to use them. Secondly, every meal I saw red wine, but it's more often than not, it's homemade, very low alcohol content, and it has a lot of polyphenols, including resveratrol, probably anywhere from 5 to 10 milligrams of resveratrol, which is very protective to the body and the heart and the brain. And also grapes galore. Grapes are everywhere. On every table, you find grapes because everyone loves growing grapes and eating grapes. And I didn't see refrigerators filled with food. Instead, it was phenomenal to watch this in the morning, to go down to this small town and wait there. And first you see the farmers' trucks coming in, and then the gigantic farmer's market. It was huge, bigger than any I've seen in the United States. And the largest one in the United States is in Dallas. In fact, I was just there a couple weeks ago, and I just wanted to see what they have now. And it's changing, a lot of home-crafted items, but it's the deal with the farmer's market, which is really smart. You cannot sell anything you didn't make, and therefore it emphasizes a lot of original homemade foods. In any case, so here in France, you'll go in and you'll see every type of herb and fruit and vegetables and seasonings at these farmers market, and you see these people with these bags over their shoulders, frequently on a bike, and they'll load up their French bread here and whatever they're buying, mushrooms, and they take it home and they want to use it that day. So they buy the same day. So stuff is as fresh as it can be. And of course, some of the greatest chefs in the world are in France. In fact, I went into a restaurant, not a special restaurant, not a fancy, not a famous restaurant. And I said, I'm a vegan. Do you have dishes that I could eat? And the guy smiled, said, of course we do. And he brought out what was quite simply one of the most amazing vegan dishes I've ever seen. Now, I'm a gourmet chef. I have over 2,500 original recipes, 8 cookbooks. I'm working on my 9th right now. I'm going to finish it this summer. And so I'm used to seeing beautiful dishes prepared because I prepare them and with natural ingredients. I'd never seen anything like this. I would call it a crown of vegetables. Now imagine not just a plate. This isn't a plate we're talking about. This is a serving platter, like 3 times the size of a plate. And it was done beautifully with at least 15 different types of vegetables and a couple different types of pâté. One was a white bean pâté, and each one had a different sauce on it. It was done like a crown, so it goes up to a point. And I couldn't have eaten that in three meals. It was $10. Whoa. I gave him a very large tip, and I said to them, my compliments to the chef. This is just, you know, amazing. But that's sometimes how the French cuisine will affect you. It's just the Italians and the French, the two finest types of dishes I can find in Europe. In any case, everywhere people are eating fruits. They also walk a lot, lots of physical labor. Now, when I started talking with some doctors and people, I find out that the French have a much healthier diet than what we are aware of. They do more exercise. They do smoke a lot, but they do a lot of exercising. They drink a lot of spring water. If they're drinking water out of the tap, it's generally because it's artesian well water more often than not in the country, and it's healthy. They actually go to places that are called the healing waters. They'll go to a place and drink water for a week every day and bathe in a certain water. They walk around these white robes, and all day long, they're just relaxing, listening to beautiful music, classical music, and taking in the healing waters. And it's all over the country, not just a couple places. And so they're very conscious of this. They also take in bitters. They take in herbs. They have a lot of culinary herbs that are both tasteful but also healing. So I came back, and I had a completely different perspective. And somehow, American medicine took having some homemade red wine with lots of fruits and vegetables eaten in addition to the meal. And meals are lighter there than here. And suddenly it's have some bourbon or vodka or gin twice a day. Killing people. Absolutely, positively, unequivocally killing people. Now, I had already written a book, a very popular selling book, called Alcohol Nutrition. So I'd already studied all the scientific literature on alcohol. So this was after that. So this whole idea of drinking in moderation, it helps your heart. It's always been a lie. And so here's what is said, published in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs, University of Victoria in British Columbia. Quote, many people believe that having a glass of wine with dinner or moderately drinking any kind of alcohol will protect them from heart disease. But a hard look at the evidence finds little support for that. That's the conclusion of a new research review in the current issue of the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Nutrition. So, just to share that with you. Dispelling some of these myths. Now, something that will help you are grape powders. This is from Taipei Medical University in Taiwan. And here's what it says. Quote, fruit and vegetable consumption has been found to prevent or diminish cognitive impairment, while diets high in fructose and fat have been shown to metabolically be stressful. This was published in Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. And, quote, here we have presented results showing that grape consumption exerted beneficial effects on the expression of neurodegeneration-related proteins in aged rats on a long-term high-fat, high-sugar diet. And what were they giving? They were giving grape powder. Grape powder. It's helped to ease hyperglycemia, cognitive dysfunction in older rats. So the older ones got better and younger because they had grape powder. Gee whiz. Grape powder. Let me think. Good for the brain. Good for the arteries. And good if you've been on a high-fat, high-sugar diet. I've said many times, grapes are one of nature's 10 most perfect foods. Also today, negative thoughts harm your health by damaging your DNA. This is brand new. So what's it mean? It means lose your temper, as people do, and you think nothing happens. Wrong. Frustrated with your colleagues at work? You may be cutting your life short. That's the warning from molecular biologist Professor Elizabeth Blackburn, who won the Nobel Prize in Medicine and is a big advocate for understanding the relationship between stress and aging. The authors claim in their book, The Telomere Effect, that negative thoughts harm your health at the DNA level. And research has shown that a person's social relationships and environment and lifestyles affect their genes. Quote, even though you were born with a particular set of genes, the way you live can influence how they express themselves. So what they found was components of the DNA called telomeres determine how fast your cells age. Short telomeres are one of the major reasons human cells grow old fast. In other words, aging could possibly, quote, be accelerated or slowed down by how we perceive things and our stress levels. This is interesting because I just read this morning, and my one big part, about an hour of my lecture last night on the aging process, was what do we need to do to slow down the aging of the telomeres, repair damage to the mitochondria, and prevent DNA damage from occurring in the first place. So I gave insights of what to do to reverse the aging process. Let's hope people pay attention. Finally, from the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew in London, scientists identified 28,000 different medicinal plants that treat ailments from cancer to diabetes. Wow, that's a lot. So we're hearing a lot about plant-based medicine, and we didn't realize how definitive this is. Well, they say definitive, yeah. Here at Britain's Royal Botanical Gardens, we have 28,000 different plants that have medicinal value. A lot more respect for plants out there. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome everyone around the world from our environmental segment. This is from a Climate News Network, and it says, German scientists have worked out the process that could destroy an Antarctic ice shelf the size of Iraq. They predict that the oceanographic machinery that keeps the Rani ice shelf in the Weddell Sea from failing. But when that breaks, then there's nothing holding back all the rest of the glacier. Now, and they say that this, quote, and the insulating zone of cold, very salty water that had for centuries served as a natural protection for the world's second largest ice shelf will be gone. And the Southern Ocean will have been changed forever. The ice will lose its anchorage on the seafloor. This had served as a break on glacial movements from the Antarctic mainland, so the flow of glacial ice from the continent to the sea will increase. All right, let's go back 9 years. 9 years ago, I told you that we weren't paying attention to the little things, and we should. The die-off in the forest in California and some of the northern boreal forests from beetles, because it was getting so hot that the trees' natural defenses were, in effect, the trees' immune systems were being under attack, and we were getting decimated. How many trees? Over 100 million trees have died in California alone. So it's serious. And now we see that one half of all the water sources in the United States, all the rivers and streams, are polluted. too polluted for human consumption. We weren't paying attention, and this is what happens. Now we're seeing that much of the ocean is becoming too acidic for the plants there to live and for the mammals to live. And as a result, it's breaking up and disrupting their food chain, so they're dying off. So now we have all these whales and walruses and sea lions and dolphins dying in massive amounts. The latest are salmon. I believe that has a lot to do with the radiation from Fukushima. We're not talking about a few or a few thousand or even a few million. We're talking about over 100 million. And that's just in the last month. So what we pay attention to is what's in front of us that day. But we're not paying attention to how dry it's getting in some areas and how excessively wet in other areas. You don't want it dry and you don't want wet, because if it's too wet, it rots out the root system so seeds can't germinate, or if a plant's already growing, it will rot out the plant. If it's too dry and too hot, then a seed won't germinate. Either way, it's happening in massive amounts. But also, because of global warming, you now have a very, very realistic projection that the Arctic will be ice-free in probably 1 to 3 years from now. When that happens, you will have so much heating of the Arctic and so much of the methane gases being released from the frozen land that had been there, that you're going to increase global warming even more. It's a feedback loop. The warmer the water gets, the more methane is released from the permafrost. The more permafrost that thaws and turns to mud, the more that gas goes in the atmosphere. The hotter it gets, the more, and you get into a feedback loop. It's happening. In fact, the Larsen Sea Shelf, which is about 110 to 120 miles long, or 3/4 mile deep and over 300 feet wide, that's a huge iceberg, largest iceberg in history. It's due to break off at any time now. Any day it could break. When that breaks, all that gigantic glacier in Antarctica will have nothing backstopping it. It'll start sliding in to the water. And since the water underneath Antarctica is warming up, then you have the underneath warming up, the top warming up, and you're going to see the rise of the ocean. And it's going to be much higher than anyone anticipated and much faster. So just to give you a heads up, if you live on the ocean, wouldn't be the place I would be living. In fact, I lived on the ocean. For 15 years, I had an apartment right in South Beach, second ocean, beautiful. And I thought, do I want to sell it? No. And because I love going for a run on the ocean every day, love the climate. But I wanted to look ahead at what was a more sustainable environment, and that's a choice I made. And finally today, cycling to work. A major new study suggests health benefits are staggering. This is from Jason Gill, The Conversation. Quote, research has consistently shown that people who are less physically active are both more likely to develop health problems like heart disease and type 2 diabetes and to die younger. Yet there is increasing evidence that physical activity levels are on the decline. The problem is that when there are many demands on our time, many people find prioritizing exercise difficult. One answer is to multitask by cycling or walking to work. We've just completed the largest ever study into how this affects your health. Published in the British Medical Journal today, the results from cycling in particular have important implications. They suggest that councils and governments need to make it a top priority to encourage as many commuters to get on their bikes as possible. Cycling or walking to work, sometimes referred to as active commuting, is not very common in the United States or the United Kingdom. Only 3% of commuters cycle to work, and one of the lowest rates in Europe, whereas the Dutch, 43%, and the Danes, 30%. By the way, it's a lot less in the United States as well. So when you're cycling, you are creating endorphins, feel-good hormones. You're burning up fat in your belly, your buttocks and your legs, strengthening your muscles, producing more human growth hormone, forcing more minerals into the long bones so you have stronger bones, less osteoporosis, and a better aerobic, lower heart rate. So get out and cycle wherever possible. Now, I want to play you a clip from Bill Maher and in a short debate with Cornel West. Then I'll respond to it with my own commentary.
Because I know this is a matter close to your heart. There was an acquittal this week of a police officer, Betty Jo Shelby from Tulsa. She shot Terrence Crutcher, an unarmed black man. She said she feared for her life. And then in South Carolina, Michael Slager shot Walter Scott in the back, running away, and that was a mistrial. And this argument that the cops get away with, I was fearful that they might do something erratic. I thought when you went into the police department, you understood that there was some danger in this job. I don't know where they got this idea that if I fear at all, I am allowed to shoot you. But that seems what's happening. And by the way, Trump is all for it, and Hillary Clinton wouldn't have been. Well, so... as someone who said they were equally awful,
no,
I'd like...
No, I didn't say equally
yes,
awful.
Yes, you did.
I said one was a disaster, another was a catastrophe.
Exactly my point.
But
how
a disaster
is, that
is better than a catastrophe.
Well, that point was lost.
Let's keep the focus where it belongs. The police have yet to go to jail when they end up in committing violence and murdering these young black brothers and sisters.
Right.
And the problem is we want a fair trial
and
for them, but there's a chronic racism that's shot through and over again, but it's just not the police. Same is true with Wall Street. No Wall Street executives go to jail either. Rule of law comes down hard on the poor, and the well-to-do get off, or the police get off because they're protecting the property.
But Hillary's first speech was about mass
Hillary gave speeches about all kind of stuff, but it didn't have a whole lot of integrity in it, though, brother. That was
that's such...
Spit it out.
Really?
Look how they treated Bernie Sanders, man. They concerned about the Russians. Look how they treated Bernie Sanders. Bernie would have won if he had a chance. He would have won if he had a chance. Don't defend Hillary. Hillary can't even take responsibility for the fact that she lost the election.
Look what you did to him.
On everybody,
but he's so wrong.
Don't trot Hillary out on me now.
He's so wrong.
No.
He's so wrong.
She's better than Trump, but don't lie about the sister. Just
she's better than Trump. That's all I'm saying. A lot better than Trump in so many ways. And just on this...
That doesn't take too much. That doesn't take too much. Who is it better than Trump?
That's not an answer. It's glib. It's beneath you. For someone who's such an intellectual, that answer is beneath you.
Let me tell you why it's not. It's precisely because when I ask you, would you vote for Donald Trump over David Duke, you said you wouldn't vote for either one.
Hillary is not David Duke.
No, but it's this. If you're talking about Wall Street, if you're talking about militarism, if you're talking about dealing with folk in Honduras,
she's light years better than him about all of them.
All of those issues, Hillary is unacceptable.
No, she is not unacceptable.
She was.
Why was she arguing the last election? We got stuff going on over here.
Because they haven't learned the lesson that we need to win the next election.
No.
That's why.
No. If you're going to lie,
we're not lying.
Oh, we're not lying? Yeah, there is. Let me give you my thoughts on this. And this is a shout-out to Bill Maher. It's fine to be a very strong defender of Hillary Clinton, giving her campaign over, I think Obama, you gave over $1 million, and to hold your political views as stridently as you wish. No problem with that. But when you say that Hillary is so much better... well, how close have you examined her record? I have. Let's be very specific. With more than 100 million people who could have voted not voting for either candidate because they didn't see the value in either candidate, and 1 million people, very small number, voting for Jill Stein, it shows you how intentionally uninformed people are or biased. Hillary is not a feminist. She is a fake faux feminist. And the seasoned, authentic feminists call her out. She has been called the feminist false prophet, the anti-woman feminist, the voice of corporate feminism, that she is. She has viciously attacked every woman who's gone public with Bill's, her husband's sexual advancements, including multiple allegations of rape, therefore negating millions of women who have been harassed and who are afraid to come forward because they will be treated the way Hillary has treated them. Now, recently, Roger Ailes, who just died, was forced out of Fox News that he founded 20 years ago. Bill O'Reilly, who had been accused of sexual harassment but no actual sex, lost his job as well. Your husband, Hillary Clinton, was accused of sexual, not just harassment, but of rape, multiple times. And the women each had their own tale of how they were threatened, how they were blackballed, blackmailed. And where are the hearings? Do you realize how many women would come forward, as they did with Bill Cosby, if suddenly they were allowed to without fear of retaliation? Also, you were against universal health care. Show me an issue that would impact women any less than universal health care. It is an important issue for them. You opposed it. You sided with Big Pharma. When women were unable to take medications they couldn't afford, though they might have needed, and had to select between food, mortgage, electricity, and medication, you sided with Big Pharma. You were paid big bucks by Wall Street, big bucks by Big Energy, and big bucks by Big Pharma for lectures. You never once criticized the high prices or sought legislation to lower them to make women able to do this. Also, her support of her husband's welfare reforms devastated African-American families. What horror for the wives and girlfriends and their kids when over a million and a half were found that they had no support from the government at all. That was Hillary and Bill Clinton. Now, Bill, maybe you haven't been to South Philadelphia. I have. Maybe you haven't been to Compton, Campton, Detroit in the ghettos. I have. I've been with the rest of you dilettantes never stepped foot. Well, I do know one of the clubs you do step foot into, Bill. Maybe you should have a discussion on that some night in Los Angeles. But the places I go, I see actual real people, not drooling celebrities or sycophants. These people suffer because of Hillary Clinton. I never saw a person suffering that Hillary helped. If you have such a person, let me know about it. I can show you a lot of people. And then look at the company she keeps, Madeleine Albright. That's one of her heroes. What about the men in her life that she has considered a special species of masculinity? Henry Kissinger, Robert Kagan, Barry Goldwater, Anthony Summers, Sam Walton. These are all people who are neocons, corporatists. These are neoliberals. So where's your Chris Hedges? Where's your Cornel West? Where are the people who are true men of character and compassion and spiritual values? They're real diplomats. She's been an ardent apologist for Walmart employee policies that have kept millions of families in the working poor category. She wrote in her 2003 book, Living History, that CEO Sam Walton, quote, taught me a great deal about corporate integrity and success, end quote. Really? Since when does Walmart or any of its heirs know a damn thing about integrity, but they do know a lot about success? They created a special board for her, a seat on their board that was just for Hillary Clinton. And she was a corporatist, and she was an anti-unionist, and she did not want the paid maternity leave. She didn't want not a living wage, and she didn't even want to increase the minimum wage. So those are millions of people that count also. Or are they a part of the left-wing deplorable? So if you're right-wing and poor and working, you're deplorable. But what about all those people that she put in prison by her policies and she put on the street? Are they just another form of deplorable to the dilettante, elite, ass-kissing liberal that you are and many others like you? The reality is that Hillary's attack on Jeremiah Wright was also indirectly an attack on black churches who have reason to sharply criticize the government's civil rights record. Later polls show that in states where Hillary beat Obama in the primaries, Hillary having made race an issue was a key factor in voting. She basically took a cue from the right-wing racist rhetoric and used it in a dumbed-down manner to her advantage. And also Clinton, supported by Hillary, that had been determined be negative for minorities. The largest increase in federal and state prison inmates in history, the Clintons. Three strikes law in 1994, the Clintons. $30 billion crime bill that created dozens of new federal capital crimes, mandated life in sentences, the Clintons. State prison grants were partnered with welfare monies, which then took away from the latter and to profit the former, Clintons. Last night on 60 Minutes, I saw a segment, a few minutes of a segment about what this one man is doing to reform the Chicago prison population. He said 50% of the people in this prison shouldn't be here. I'm going to try to get them out. Your husband and you, Hillary, put them in there. When Clinton left office, she and he had the highest incarceration rates in the world. 90% of drug offenders in prison were black. In 1996, penal budget was twice that of food stamps. And the Clintons' welfare reform slashed welfare funding by $54 billion. That's a lot of food that could have been eaten by poor people that weren't because of Hillary and Bill Clinton. And that led to extreme poverty, slashing public housing by 61%, increasing prison and correction facilities by 171%, eliminating the Pell Education grants for prisoners, signed legislation that imposed lifetime bans on welfare and food stamps for anyone convicted of felony drug offense. So if you possess marijuana and you went to jail and you pled it out, you might not ever be able to get out and get welfare or food stamps. And millennials represent the Occupy generation, complete distrust of Wall Street and large multinational corporations. And at no time did she come out in honest and vocal support of the Occupy movement, not once. She was wishy-washy on relief of student debt. She didn't want to support minimum wage of $15. The payday loan sharks are good friends of the Clinton Democrats. For years, she fought regulations on payday loans and later changed her stance on this due to Elizabeth Warren. But she was always in the pocket of the payday loan people. And she supported Bush's bankruptcy overhaul bill that excluded college loans from bankruptcy filings. And young adults are trying to become homeowners. And home ownership is reaching all-time low, especially among people entering the workforce. And in a release video in January, Hillary blames homeowners for the financial crisis. She said that the economic problems are certainly not all Wall Street's fault. Yeah, they were. And also her husband's and hers trashing the Glass-Steagall Act. The consistency of her voting for increased defense budgets, the supporting the intelligence and spy complex, the militarism. As Secretary of State, she conducted many dealings to expand U.S. corporate weapons sales to other countries, notably in the Gulf and Africa. She was responsible for regime changes in Honduras, Ukraine, Libya, Paraguay. She attempted it in Venezuela, and also she wanted to off Assad in Syria. Her entire career as Secretary of State was shrouded in her own secret activities to benefit the Clinton family and foundation. And in debates, Sanders said he would end National Security Agency spying. Hillary approved his stance in favor of it. And environmentally, no, she never did anything for the environment. She supported offshore drilling. She supported gas hydrofracking. She supported GMOs. She supported free trade. She was a major cheerleader for TTP and the TPP. She believed in prosecuting whistleblowers and journalists. As she said, she would have thrown the book at Assange and Snowden. She believed in assassinating the U.S. citizens. Her leaked emails expose her support of Obama's assassination policy and goes further creation of an assassination teams to US, go after U.S. citizens. She believed in the Patriot Act. And she believed in warrantless surveillance, and she believed in getting rid of the immigrants. So, Those are just a few of the things, time permitting, that we can say about Hillary Clinton. So you support all those things? You think, Bill, that those were all good for America, good for people? Well, then maybe you ought to get out and see who's really living in this country, because it's clear between where you live in Los Angeles, the people you hang with, that maybe there's another America you should get in touch with. And maybe Cornel West was just trying to give you a little heads up, but you kept interrupting him. And now to an issue I think we should spend just a few minutes thinking about, and that is, on the one hand, both the Obama administration and what would have been the Clinton administration if she won, and the Trump administration talk about how they don't respect, in fact, they actually hate whistleblowers. And yet here's Julian Assange, and he is doing the same thing that the New York Times does, or any other paper or network. He's taking information that has been qualified and has been found accurate, and he is sharing with us. And here's what bothers me. On both the Senate side and the House side, you have oversight committees with individuals who are held responsible to make sure that the government is not doing anything untoward or illegal or against the Constitution, because every member of government has to take an oath to the Constitution, not to an office, but to the Constitution. And yet here is all this information given by WikiLeaks showing illegal activity that has been done, condoned, by high-ranking officials. Now, I would think that the issue is, if you're on these committees, why aren't you the ones coming forward and saying that there are government employees and government agents that are breaking the law? But they don't, ever. Instead, we have to find out from some employee inside that they became so frustrated, so angry, so outraged at these illegalities that they risked their career and possibly their life by sharing this information with us. So I consider them heroes. Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, these are heroes. And others have gone, Karakawa went to jail for exposing rendition and waterboarding. Well, it was the rendition and waterboarding that was illegal. Those are crimes against humanity. And yet the people doing it, the psychologists who were part of it, the torturers, the people who destroyed all the tapes, obstruction of justice, none of them were held accountable. But the person who exposed it spent 20 months in prison. So we've got it all wrong about Julian Assange. And it's unfortunate the media has not seemed to understand this. Here's the latest. The CIA is the world's most dangerously incompetent spy agency, says Wikipedia's founder, Julian Assange. Let's hear what he has to say.
The CIA is the world's most dangerously incompetent spy agency. That's what WikiLeaks editor Julian Assange has told RT after the CIA slammed him as the terrorist's best friend. The agency also claims Russian hacking of the US election is a fact, and this channel's been trying to cover it up. Well, the war of words came up after the host of RT's show Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi, interviewed former CIA officer Ray McGovern.
Julian and his WikiLeaks associates are in possession now of authentic or original CIA documents that show things like a capability that allows the CIA to hack into other systems. It's shown in these documents that the CIA is working in Russian, Chinese, Arabic, Farsi, and Korean to leave little telltale signs when they hack into a computer system. Could it be that the Russian hack was really done by John Brennan of the CIA?
That reference to John Brennan, of course, President Obama's head of the CIA. Quite an allegation, and as usual on Going Underground, we asked the CIA for comment. Whenever we hear allegations against the CIA, we do that as a matter of course. To date, the CIA has never given us a response. But Mike Pompeo, the new boss of the CIA under Donald Trump, perhaps he's marking a whole new era of openness, because this is what we heard from Heather Fritz Horniak, spokesperson for the Central Intelligence Agency.
Dictators and terrorists have no better friend in the world than Julian Assange, as theirs is the only privacy he protects. The responsibility of the Russian intelligence services for the election-related hacking is an established fact, but it is not surprising that an identified propaganda outlet like RT would attempt to muddle those facts. No reputable news organization doubts Russian culpability.
It's quite an allegation against Julian Assange under arbitrary detention here in London at the Ecuadorian embassy, and it drew quite a swift response from Assange currently in the embassy.
The CIA is the world's most dangerously incompetent spy agency. It has armed terrorists, destroyed democracies, and installed and maintained dictatorships the world over. There are good men and women at the CIA, but if our publications are any guide, they work for WikiLeaks.
That was Julian Assange's response to the CIA criticizing Julian Assange for being a friend of dictators. So here we have WikiLeaks in an open war of words with the CIA. Donald Trump on the record for saying, on the one hand, we love WikiLeaks, and on the other, that Chelsea Manning was a traitor whose sentence should never have been commuted by outgoing U.S. President Obama. So, at the moment, all we know is the CIA do not like RT, do not like WikiLeaks, and are certainly being more open about it.
And you can watch the full episode of Going Underground and the interview with former CIA officer Ray McGovern here on RT on Wednesday, May the 17th. The programme was planned to cover the scheduled release of whistleblower Chelsea Manning and the open letter written to Donald Trump calling on the president to drop all charges against WikiLeaks and its boss Julian Assange. Well, RT's Laura Smith has the details.
So this is a letter. It's short but sweet, I should say. It calls on President Trump to close the grand jury investigation into Julian Assange and his WikiLeaks staff, drop any charges against them. And it invokes the spirit of free speech. It says that a threat to WikiLeaks' work is a threat to all free journalism. And it rather pointedly reminds President Trump that a free press was key to him having a platform on which to run for president at all. It's been released by the Courage Foundation, which is an organization that raises funds for the legal defense of whistleblowers, including Edward Snowden. And he's just one of the more than 750 signatories to this letter. People are signing all the time. Journalists, activists, artists, public figures, people like Noam Chomsky, the actor Pamela Anderson, film director Ken Loach, Vivian Westwood, to name just a few. You may be asking why. Why now? Well, it appears that the U.S. is stepping up its attempts to get its hands on Julian Assange. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, just last month called it a priority.
We are going to step up our effort and already are stepping up our efforts on all leaks. This is a matter that's gone beyond anything I'm aware of. We have professionals that have been at the security business of the United States for many years that are shocked by the number of leaks.
And how will this be received in the White House? Well, frankly, it's anyone's guess. Donald Trump, as we know, has something of a love-hate relationship with WikiLeaks. He loves them for leaking Hillary Clinton's emails, but he hates them for pretty much everything else.
This just came out. This just came out. WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks.
Papers are being leaked. Things are being leaked. It's criminal action, criminal act.
We know that this is a president who is notorious for changing his mind. So who knows whether this small thing will be what ends Julian Assange's exile here in the Ecuadorian embassy behind me. He will have been here for 5 years next month.
I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening today. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.